very much. It's a great pleasure to be here, have the opportunity to address myself to the topic that Richard Cornell would have so ably handled. I suppose many of you, if not all of you, have been exposed to the very fine book, Reclaiming the American Dream. It's been a great help to me, and I will be speaking primarily on this independent sector that Dick identified so well, and the philosophical background for it, and then express a few opinions as to alternatives that could be offered within this framework. What has made America great is not what we have done under compulsion of law, but what we have done of our own volition. The most powerful force on earth is the spontaneous cooperation of free people, and there are many other such phrases that please us. But how do we go about practically expressing those kinds of ideas in the world in which we live today? It's not just enough any longer to believe in these things. We must find ways to express them tangibly. This nation traditionally has, on an individual basis, addressed itself to problems. Corn husking bees and barn raisings and quilting bees and things like this were part of our heritage. I had the good fortune of being born and raised on the family farm in Ohio, and I'm not so old that I haven't been able to participate in some of these things myself. But it seems today we have passed the point of really being convinced any longer that we can, as a society, deal with the major problems facing us on this same basis. What do we do about urban renewal and low-cost housing and migratory worker problems and things of this type? These are so big only the government can handle them, we're told. Is this true? Well, of course, we don't believe that it is true. And one of the theses of Mr. Cornell's book is that every problem has been solved. Well, you get around and look at a specific problem. Has juvenile delinquency been successfully approached and dealt with anywhere? Yes, it has. In fact, is a number of places. Why is it we couldn't find out where it was dealt with satisfactorily? What were the circumstances involved? What were the ingredients? And how would that apply to another area where this problem is great and felt by the people? Now, you might call this a demonstration project basis. And so you begin to find where problems have been successfully solved, and you begin to apply those principles to other areas of the country. I was very pleased when Dick was offered the opportunity to take over this position as executive vice president with NAM. I heard George Romney at a 71st Congress in New York address himself to a number of the things that you've been considering here. And he stopped in the middle of his address there at that luncheon and said, one of the reasons I'm talking this way, and he'd been talking about getting people involved and coming up with alternatives and so forth, is because of Richard Cornell. And I believe Dick's influence is being felt increasingly because all he did was simply express very well what many people have thought about but hadn't put down in such good continuity. Now, why do we believe this way? Why do we respond this way? Well, we believe that we were created with certain inalienable rights, and that for every right there's a responsibility, and that the responsibility is not just to love God and your neighbor as yourself, but to find a way to express your love for your neighbor, and you find these ways by looking around and seeing needs. The entrepreneurial approach of problem solving is to first get responsive yourself, then begin to twist the arms of other people and get a job done. 975,000 institutions operate on this nonprofit individual initiative basis in this country. And this includes, of course, churches and unions and research institutes and hospitals and nonprofit associations, societies and affiliations, and endless organizations, the service clubs, etc. Now, here is a tremendous potential, but how does one go about utilizing it systematically? Well, I dealt with that problem for a number of years. I started this program, Data International, 8 years ago, in Palo Alto, California, because I had traveled extensively through many European, Middle Eastern, and Asian countries, and the thing that disturbed me was that many of the problems that I had seen there had been solved in the previous country. Why was it we couldn't transfer this information, basic problem-solving information? And if it exists overseas, it also exists here. And so we began to try to deal with this, and in these last 8 years, thousands and thousands of problems have been resolved in over 100 countries through thousands of volunteer Americans in residence over there by simply utilizing a simple concept of a clearinghouse or matchmaking switchboard, where a missionary or a Peace Corps volunteer or a member of a voluntary agency saw a problem, sent them to our offices in Palo Alto, and they were in turn channeled to engineers, scientists, educators, farmers, so forth in this country. This attracted quite a bit of attention. Front page Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Saturday Evening Post, lots of things like this. But I had to face the fact that this idea was never going to catch on, really. Now that's a hard thing to face, but it's true. And the thing that's one of the basic problems we face in groups like this is we can talk and we can think and we can write, but we are not communicating yet. We are not getting our story out to the people of this country sufficiently. That's obvious to us, but what do we do about it besides be frustrated? The Peace Corps comes along with an old idea, given a glamorous name and identification with a very dynamic president. And I won't minimize the $30 million allocated to it the first year either, $90 million the second year, $120 million the third year. And now we have a national institution duplicating the efforts of the voluntary agencies, the mission groups, and so forth. Was there a need, as Mr. Friedman has said? No, there was not a need for the Peace Corps. But it's here. So reality is another side of it. Reconciling idealism with realism is an essential thing for us, isn't it? The Peace Corps has popularized this concept, and whereas you either were a wild-eyed idealist or sort of a religious fanatic in the minds of most people to leave comfortable home and country and serve in the needy areas of the world, now you're a national hero when you do the same thing. Why? They beat our time. They told the story convincingly. And they did it very cleverly. You've seen those spot announcements. Lazying on the beach, transistor radio going. If you don't have anything better to do, join the Peace Corps. And so forth. Last year, they rejected 10 out of 11 applicants, while the voluntary agencies were still grubbing around trying to get enough people to go overseas. Why? Because they're out there with the message in a new way. Well, last year on the Today Show, Hugh Downs and I were going round and around on the philosophy of the independent sector and why this was so important and why it was a basic thing that this nation must once again rediscover. And until we did, we're going to continue to go in reverse. And he was coming on very strong on this. I'd referred to Dave Tocqueville and many others who had put it so well. But again, how to go about this? Whether it's domestic or it's international, it's the same problem. Well, a man who starts every day with the Today Show happened to be heading up the People to People program at that time, and he called me there at CBS. And he asked me to stop in Kansas City on the way back to Palo Alto, and I did. And to make a long story short, I ended up in this position because I had the audacity to make a couple of suggestions to it, to the executive committee of that program. I said that I believe that until we can capture the imagination of people on a national scale, we will not reverse the trend. We won't even hardly slow it. And that's where we must start, begin to slow down things, not reverse, but just begin to slow it down. And we had to get out there before the public with a very clear-cut message, and that message is simply this, that you as an individual can do something significantly about the situations in this country and the world, and show illustration after illustration as to how this can happen. Well, Dick Cornell and I have known each other for a couple of years, and he told me a little sense of frustration he had. The book comes out, and lots of people write to him, and they say, "You're right, Mr. Cornell. I believe in this. Now what am I going to do?" Well, look around and find something. All kinds of things to do, such as, well, depending on what your background is, and, you know, you can horse around a little bit, but you've got to find a specific, because a challenge can be an inoculation against action if you're not given some means to respond to it. You can eventually become insensitive. And so I'm very pleased to be able to work together with Dick in this area. The two suggestions we made are these. One, that we should mount an extensive national advertising campaign in behalf of the independent sector of America, hopefully in cooperation with the Advertising Council. We have a proposal with them now. This will give us $5 to $7 million worth of public service space this coming year. To tell what story? To tell the story of individual initiative, to show how people who saw needs rallied other people to meet those needs simply because there was a need, not because they had to do it. They wanted to do it, and how successful this has been. And these hundreds and hundreds of organizations I've been used to working with in the international field have the same problem. World Neighbors in Oklahoma City, Frank Laubach with Laubach Literacy Program. If I would ask you here, how many of you heard of this man? I may see a hand or two. He's the Schweitzer of the day, really. This man has devoted his life to teaching the illiterate of the world to read. Worked in over 100 countries. And yet the average person has never heard of this man. Never heard of him. Never heard of the word Laubach. Because we're not getting the message out. Procter & Gamble spent $240 million selling toothpaste and other things. How much are we spending to communicate this philosophy? We have our magazines, and we read them mostly between ourselves. But how do we get it out so that other people will read it and get the story told? Well, that's point number one. Tell the story by using examples. And then two, when the person who is seeing this between I Love Lucy and Gunsmoke or wherever you catch people with a 30-second spot, and they respond and they write in and they say, you're right, I've thought about this many times. I'm a farmer in Kansas. Now, what can I do? Is there anything that I personally can do about either the situation in this country or in some other country? And brother, if you don't have an answer for that man in some way that he can take that first step towards getting involved, he'll go back and be far worse off than he ever was before. Because you'll say, well, I tried and couldn't find anything, and that's what I thought anyway, and there he is. And the tragic thing is that these opportunities are all around, but people are busy, and they don't seek them out. They don't subscribe to the journals that are giving these examples. The Reader's Digest and a few others are rare exceptions to bringing out good, solved problems, and it's popular treatment, and so it is read. But these two things working together, we think, can have a significant impact. I went out to talk with General Eisenhower about it just a couple weeks ago in Indio. Well, you know, this thing started off with a skyrocket in 1956, and it went out. You know what happened to skyrockets when they go off? That was about it. And Charlie Wilson, who'd been eminently successful in General Electric, couldn't sell it. It had been accused of being a fuzzy ball floating 6 feet above the ground with peace, motherhood, and the flag painted on it. And you salute when it goes by. What propels it and how it goes from point A to point B, no one knows. Who could be against it? But how the heck was it going to get a job done? Well, alternatives to what? Alternatives to federal intervention, to this, to that. You cover them in these meetings. They're all there. The government's here and the government's there. And you take a look at every aspect of the government's programming and you will find counterpart agencies operating. There's nothing new under the sun. So the story really is that we haven't done a job of convincingly telling people that something is being done and could be far more effective if they would get behind it and get involved with it simply because the need is there. Well, Edward Everett Hale, you remember, put it very well. He said, I'm only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do. Well, these are lovely. But that something has to be very specific. And I would leave as just a parting word with you that it's extremely important for all of us to come to grips with this problem. How do we communicate what we are doing to our fellow man so that after he hears this, he begins to then take steps which express this concern in tangible form? I happen to be in this thing because I'm a committed Christian. I believe Christianity is valueless to anyone until they find some way to express it. It's not only valueless to everybody else, but it's valueless to the person who possesses the faith. And so we proceed out of all kinds of basic convictions in these same general directions. And it's important for us to be consistent with that which we have come to know and to help our fellow man who has not yet benefited from personal participation in it. It's a pleasure to be here today. Dick Cornell and I try to exchange speaking opportunities. And I'm very happy that I see a trend developing. And everywhere I've gone the last few weeks, talking with senators, talking with agency people, talking with foundations, and I've made applications with over 30 of the largest foundations in the country these last several weeks, that they're beginning to think in these terms. From the largest one, you know what that one is, all the way on down to some small ones. I think this is an encouraging thing. And this kind of a society is a great help to all of us. Recharge our batteries and get out and get the job done. Thank you so much.